Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sa Hai Idam Bhagavan Kala Shaktya Sa Kalvidam Bhagavan Kala Shaktya Sakalvidam Bhagavan Kala Shaktya Guna Prabhahena Vibhakta Virya Guna Prabhahena Vibhakta Virya Guna Prabhahena Vibhakta Virya Sakalvidam Bhagavan Kala Shaktya Guna Prabhahena Vibhakta Virya Karoti Akataiva Nihanti Ahanta Karoti Akataiva Nihanti Ahanta Karoti Akataiva Nihanti Ahanta Sheshta Vibhumna Kalu Durvibhavya Chesta Vibhumna Kalu Durvibhavya Chesta Vibhumna Kalu Durvibhavya Karotya Kataivani Hantya Hanta Chesta Vibhumna Kalodu Vibhavya Sakalvidam Bhagavan Kala Shaktya Guna Pravahina Vibhakta Virya Rotya Kataiva Nihantya Hanta Chesta Vibhumna Kalu Durvibhavya Sakalvidam Bhagavan Kala Shaktya Guna Pravahena Vibhakta Virya Karotya Kataiva Nihantya Hanta Chesta Vibhumna Kalu Durvibhavya
Vibhakta Virya
Karotya
Sati. Kalu.
However.
Idam. This universe. Bhagavan. The personality of Godhead. Kala. Of time. Shaktya. By the force. Guna Pravahena. By the interaction of the modes of nature. Vibhakta. Divided. Virya. Whose potencies. Karoti. Acts upon. Akarta. The non-doer. Eva. Although. Nihanti. Kills. Ahanta. Non-killer. Cheshta. The energy. Vibhumna. Of the Lord. Kalu. Certainly. Durvibhavya. Inconceivable. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, by His inconceivable supreme energy, time, causes the interaction of the three modes of material nature, and thus varieties of energy become manifest. It appears that He is acting, but He is not the actor. He is killing, but He is not the killer. Thus it is understood that only by His inconceivable power is everything happening. Responsively, please. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. By His inconceivable supreme energy, time, causes the interaction of the three modes of material nature, and thus varieties of energy become manifest. It appears that He is acting, but He is not the actor. He is killing, but He is not the killer. Thus it is understood that only by His inconceivable power is everything happening. So this story is continuing, and here in this section here there's 10 verses, starting with verse 15, going through to verse 24, where Manu is pointing out to his grandson Dhruva. He's actually explaining the situation or the state of things, as Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, or he says the nature of things. And we see how Swayambhuva Manu is actually going through a process of convincing Dhruva not to fight, or not to continue killing the Yakshas. And here in this section, these 10 verses, he's actually saying how everything's going on by the arrangement of Krishna. And then in the 24th verse, he points out that actually Krishna killed your brother. It wasn't the Yakshas at all. And then in the verse after that, he explains, but actually he's not to blame because he has no false ego and he's not attached. And it's kind of an interesting, this whole story is a very interesting evolution, because we go back to the beginning of this story of three chapters ago, where Dhruva Maharaj, when he's a five-year-old boy, how he saw his brother Uttam sitting on the lap of his father, and within him arose this desire that I'd also like to sit on the lap of my father. So then he went to sit, as we know, he went to sit on his father's lap, and his father pushed him off, and then his stepmother Saruchi, the mother of Uttam, said some harsh words to him. And his nature, being a Kshatriya, he then became very incensed by that. He felt insulted, actually, and he decided he would go to the forest on the instructions of his own mother, Suniti, I think was her name. And thereby, he, you know, at the age of five, he had the determination. He meditated upon, you know, under the instructions of Narada Muni, he meditated upon the Supreme Personality of God, and actually got the darshan of the Lord. So it's interesting that the very two persons that he was insulted by and disrespected by, when they were killed by the Yakshas, he then decided to avenge that death. So Prabhupada points out in a purport earlier on this chapter that, you know, this anger is not out of place in a devotee. And Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, he points out that Dhruva was actually acting out of duty because he wanted to show the citizens and just the people in general that, you know, he was acting properly because, you know, a member of the royal family has been killed. Now he could have just, well, you know, they caused me so much grief, so I just won't worry about it. You know, that's good riddance to them, kind of thing, because of the insult they gave to me. But Dhruva is a person of quality. He's not just an ordinary person. We see in this material world, you know, that someone upsets me, you know, and it's quite common, at least in some countries in the world, you pull a gun out and you shoot them. You know, it's not uncommon. Anyone who reads the headlines can see things like this all the time happening. But, you know, Dhruva is not of that nature, not of that quality. He has a great lineage. He comes, you know, like Swami Bhuvamanu is his grandfather, great personality, coming directly from Brahma. So he's, you know, because he's coming in such a bloodline, he's possessing great qualities. So he, rather than just acting based on his emotions, he acts out of duty. Quite common in this day and age that people, because they're absorbed, particularly in the mode of passion and ignorance, they tend to act from emotion rather than duty. We see with a great personality, and this is discussed in the Gita also, about how a person of quality will act out of duty rather than just acting according to their emotions. Of course, I'm not talking about transcendental emotions here, I'm talking about material emotions. Transcendental emotions is a different discussion. But then out of duty, he's, you know, a member of the royal family, he's been killed, therefore it is his duty to, you know, act as the way he's acting now. But then, so it's sort of come that, you know, and it's also interesting that describes in I think it was in the previous chapter, how there was 130 yakshas and he just went to them single-handedly and he's taking on 130,000 yakshas and winning, which is quite extraordinary. When you think of it, you know, it's like in this day and age, the only way you could do that is to take on 130,000 people is with a plane and an atomic bomb or something, or, you know, a missile and an atomic bomb. But he's just taking on and very, very powerfully fighting against them. And you know, there's a bit of discussion about the nature of Kshatriyas and how when the Yakshas are becoming overwhelmed, and like generally people would all just run away and think, well, this is too scary for me. But the Yakshas are impressed and they're applauding Dhruva and they think, wow, this is amazing. And then with renewed vigor, they attack him. And the same with him, you know, he's covered by arrows and he's disappeared and the demigods are sort of, oh no, he's defeated and that. And then Prabhupada uses an interesting analogy of how, just like when the mountain is covered by rain clouds and the it appears like the mountain has disappeared, but actually all the dirty things are washed off the mountain. So in the same way, this analogy is used to say that the shower of arrows has washed away all Dhruva Maharaj's impurities, and he just emerges from the arrows with renewed vigor in the fight. And then it goes on, and it gets to the point now where Dhruva is actually practically exterminating the race of the Yakshas, and then Manu's becoming concerned that he's going to insult Kuvera and Lord Shiva. Because, you know, they're relatives of Kuvera and they're followers of Lord Shiva. So now he's coming down and he's intervening. He's saying, okay, this is enough. You've avenged it. And actually only one of the Yakshas acted improperly. Why do you need to wipe out the whole race? And then he's using various means. As we can see here, he's actually pointing out to Dhruva the nature of things, actually how things are going on. And he's saying, but you should understand all these things. Because you're coming from a high birth, and we can see that Dhruva, as I mentioned before, when he was 5 years old, he actually realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He saw him face to face. So we can understand that his nature is great. And Manu points out, I think it's about verse 9. He says, you know, you've proved your point here. You've shown everyone you're acting out of duty. Okay, that's enough. You don't need to continue. And then he goes on to point out in a few verses time how, you know, all this, like I said, this 10 verses here, he's pointing out the way things that happen in the world, actually how everything's going on by the arrangement of the Lord, that actually this is, this, you know, the yaksha didn't kill your brother and mother. It's actually come about by the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, you know, so no one's acted improperly here. No one's acted out of false ego, etc. like that. So there's no need for you to continue. And then he'll go on to explain, you know, how you should surrender to Krishna. Just take shelter of Krishna, as you did when you were a young boy. So he's just kind of reinforcing, you know, the lessons he's already learned. And then finally he instructs him to go make your peace with Kavera, because he's been offended by this. Because, you know, these are Kavera's family members. The same way that Dhruva became very upset when his brother was killed. Now Dhruva Maharaj has practically wiped out all of Kavera's descendants, so obviously he's going to be upset about that. So I'll read some of Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word Durvibhavya means inconceivable by our tiny brain, and Vibhakti Virya means divided in varieties of potencies. This is the right explanation of the display of creative energies in the material world. We can better understand the mercy of God by an example. A government state is always supposed to be merciful, but sometimes, in order to keep law and order, the government employs its police force, and thus punishment is meted out to the rebellious citizens. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always merciful and full of transcendental qualities. But certain individual souls have forgotten their relationship with Krishna and have endeavored to lord it over material nature. As a result of their endeavor, they are involved in varieties of material interaction. It is incorrect to argue, however, that because energy issues from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is the actor. In the previous verse, the word nimittamatram indicates that the Supreme Lord is completely aloof from the action and reaction of this material world. How is everything being done? The word inconceivable has been used. It is not within the power of one's small brain to comprehend. Unless one accepts the inconceivable power and energy of the Lord, one cannot make any progress. The forces which are certainly set up by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he is always aloof from their action and reaction. The varieties of energies produced by the interaction of material nature produce the varieties of species of life and their resultant happiness and unhappiness. So Prabhupada is emphasizing here these words inconceivable and divided in varieties of potencies. And as we understand, it says Parashya Shakti Vividhaya Shriyate, that the Lord has so many varieties of potencies and they're acting in so many different ways. Yet the living entity who's conditioned by the material nature cannot understand this. We can see the example of the scientists. They're trying to analyze the workings of the material nature and come to a conclusion about how it has all come about. And the best they've done to date is, you know, this theory of the Big Bang theory. You know, it all came from a cloud of gas. You know, like once upon a time there was a cloud of gas, you know. It kind of sounds a little bit like a fairy tale, you know, starts off once upon a time. But actually, that they may be, you know, understanding so many things here in this world, but they actually cannot understand the source of everything. And Prabhupada points out in this purport that, you know, it's not within the power of one's tiny brain. Oftentimes you use this phrase, you know, your tiny pea-like brain. You cannot understand these things. And it's a fact that even Krishna's material nature, you know, just completely refutes this theory of evolution with a few simple things. I was talking about this little, I don't know, bug or something, tiny little thing, which has got a hair-like filament that comes out the back of its body in a sort of spiral shape, and it goes round and round like a propeller. And somehow or other, this living entity is actually, there's a bearing, like an organic bearing, where this propeller goes, and it's got this motor mechanism there. And the people who are analysing this thing, it says this couldn't have possibly come about by evolution. And they're I don't remember all the details, it's not particularly scientific, but they were pointing out how this possibly could not have possibly come about by evolution. So just, you know, and they were using many, many different examples like that, how all these things are actually designed to be like, just like, you know, when you design a boat, and you put a motor in it, you put a propeller shaft in it, it couldn't have possibly have happened like that. It was designed to be like that. So, you know, we can see that actually the Supreme Lord, by his inconceivable potency, he's actually created everything. And it functions in a particular way. Nothing defies the laws of nature. There's nothing here that defies the laws of nature. But in their management, there's so many things that defies the laws of the government. I mean, just look at the country we're in. Half the country is defying the laws of the government. They're just doing their own thing. How many people in this country have a driver's license? I mean, because there's a big discussion going on right now about, you know, what's a safe way to get from Calcutta to Mayapur, because, you know, there's so many things that happen, you know, like this thing on the road and people in cars and stuff, you know. It's like, it's a terrorizing experience driving on the road here, you know. So, I mean, you just look at material arrangement and it's just so defective, it's so incompetent. But Krishna's arrangement is perfect. And how it goes about, Prabhupada's saying here, and saying in the verse, is inconceivable. They cannot understand this. Therefore, if one accepts the inconceivable nature of Krishna, the inconceivable potencies of Krishna, then we can understand how these things are going on. It's by Krishna's arrangement. We just, we just accept that it's going on like that. Another example given is that the electric powerhouse is situated in one place, but by its energies, many different types of machinery move. The production is never identical with the original source of the energy, but the original source of the energy, being the prime factor, is simultaneously one with and different from the product. So another nice analogy Prabhupada is giving is like, you know, that there's a powerhouse producing so much energy and it's being channeled all over by transmission wires, etc. like that. Yet we see all these things, and we see we have, you know, the sound is coming from this by electricity, there's lights, there's fans. Although I hope they don't turn that fan on because the light will go shooting off. Yet there's so many things going on by the utilization of this energy. And no matter how big the power cable you have coming here into Mayapur, the product or what you see, the manifestation, is never the same as the powerhouse, because the powerhouse has huge volumes of energy. So in the same way, Prabhupada is using this analogy to show that even though there may be so many wonderful manifestations of Krishna's energy, sometimes very frightening manifestations of Krishna's energy, just like, you know, several years ago there was that tsunami that swept right throughout the eastern side of India and down through into Africa. And they say that the floor of the ocean moved half a meter to cause this, and the power from that was astounding. Or just like, you know, I come from Australia, which you probably all figured out by my accent. And there was just these floods in the state north of where we live. My wife and I live in the northern part of New South Wales, so we had some minor flooding there. The bridge to the farm went under during the middle of Coolie Mela, so a lot of people were getting upset with that. But for us, it's just kind of normal. The bridge goes up, the bridge goes down, nothing changes. The floods were flooding in Queensland. It said in the newspaper, the area of land that was flooding was bigger than Germany and France put together. Which in Australia is not so big, but, you know, to give you an idea of how big it was, a third of the state was underwater. And I saw some video footage on one of the news channels of the way the floodwaters were rising. In one part, the floodwaters rose 3 meters in 10 minutes. It's like a phenomenal amount of water. And it was showing this thing, this sort of a drain out the back of this office building. And the water's just rising. There's all these, like, 20 cars parked along there. The water's just rising. All the cars got washed away. And then later on it showed a photo of all the cars just piled up. You know, at this drain, where the drain was going through the wall, all these cars were piled up. So it shows you the power of Krishna's nature. The material nature is so powerful. And we try to conquer it, yet we are conquered. And this is, Krishna says in the end of the 10th chapter of the Gita, that all these wonderful and glorious manifestations, they're just a spark of my splendor. So, again, you know, like, a devotee can appreciate the nature of Krishna because he understands that, you know, all this is just, this is nothing for Krishna. This material nature is just such a tiny drop of his splendor. It gives us an understanding of how great he is. Yet the material scientist is trying to control that, to be the Lord of all he surveys. And he never will achieve it, he just gets put into illusion. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya's philosophy, Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, is the perfect way of understanding. In this material world, the Lord incarnates in three forms of Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, by which he takes charge of the three modes of material nature. By his incarnation of Brahma, he creates, as the incarnation of Vishnu, he maintains, and by his incarnation of Shiva, he also annihilates. But the original source of Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, Gavadakashayi Vishnu, is always apart from these actions and reactions of material nature. So even though he's setting the whole thing into motion, he's still aloof from it. That's a good manager. He doesn't actually have to get in there every day and do the work himself. Whereas we see, you know, managers in this day and age that you know, oftentimes they have to roll their sleeves up and get there and do the job themselves. But Krishna, he just sets the thing into motion and he goes on with his business. And we see the description that's given there in the Brahma Samhita, how he just glances over the material nature. And even he doesn't directly touch, even his glance doesn't even touch the material nature. It's carried by Shambhu. And so he's so removed from it, he sets the whole thing into motion. The whole thing comes from his energies, yet he's completely aloof from them. He's not attached, there's no false ego involved, there's no personal agenda involved. He just sets into motion and allows the whole thing to go on by the desire of the jiva. It's quite an interesting thing. And it's kind of, it makes me think of just like whenever I've attended seminars where there's a good facilitator and they generate discussions and they just sort of put the discussion ideas out and they just let the students take it, you know, the attendees of the class, and they don't actually get involved. And I found in situations like that it's a very interesting discussion comes up. But where if someone tries to control the discussion, then it tends to be very limited and you feel like you're being sort of directed in a particular way. So similarly, Krishna, he creates the whole thing, puts it into motion by his glance and the injection of the time factor and the desire of the jivas, the kriya shakti, etc. There's so many different shaktis of Krishna go into this. Kala shakti, kriya shakti, etc. And then he just sort of steps back and lets it all happen. Because knowing that the desire of the jiva is generally speaking not taking the jiva towards Krishna. But when the jiva's desire then turns towards Krishna, then Krishna gets involved. But until that point, he steps back and just allows the jiva to live out his fantasies. You know, to think that he's the controller, to think that he's the doer. But if the jiva comes to this point of actually accepting that Krishna, this is the Supreme Lord, and that my duty is to serve Krishna, what was that? Jivera Surapahoi Krishna Nitas Krishna Tatasta Shakti Beda Beda Prakash. But, you know, as soon as the jiva understands his eternal position as Krishna's servant, then Krishna gets involved. Until that point, he just leaves it all to the jiva. So, thank you very much for patiently listening. Are there any questions at all?
As you mentioned,
what happened during Dhruva Maharaja's time that he killed as a part of his duty and not as a part of his emotions? Probably this is valid during the yuga that Dhruva Maharaja lived. But in Kali Yuga, as per the terms of law, do you think this is distinguishable? I mean, killing as a part of emotions and killing as a part of duty. Is it applicable in the present age?
There's that verse in the 11th canto. What does it say? Krishna vanam tusha krishnam sangra bhanga shapashatam yagya sankatane priyam chidichamedha. How it points out that the Lord comes in this age and he sangra bhangastra. He brings his astras, his weapons, but he doesn't use them for killing the jiva. He uses them for killing the desire of the jiva. Meaning that by the sankirtan process, the jiva gives up this desire to lord it over the material nature, the demoniac propensities, and becomes a devotee of Krishna. So in this age, based on that instruction, I would then say that in this age that the way to kill the jiva without false ego is by giving them Krishna consciousness, not by killing their external body. Because that's the direction for us, is to give. And even like, there's an interesting discussion in a purport in one of the earlier chapters of the Adi Leela, where Prabhupada explains that, you know, the verse is explaining the potency of chanting the Panchatattva Maha Mantra. And then Prabhupada explains in there, so why is it, he's saying that actually the Panchatattva Maha Mantra is more potent than the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. You can actually get bliss from chanting the Panchatattva Maha Mantra. So why don't we chant Panchatattva Maha Mantra instead of Hare Krishna? He says because Lord Chaitanya instructed us to chant Hare Krishna. So we see, you know, the instruction is there that this is the method for the age to destroy this demoniac mentality. You know, Lord Chaitanya is telling us this is what we do. So, and Prabhupada's, I'm using that to just emphasize that Prabhupada's emphasizing that even though this thing is better, we get more benefit from this, Lord Chaitanya is instructing us to do this, so this is what we should do, is give them Krishna consciousness.
Lord Chaitanya is more merciful.
And like, you know, by killing them, there's one of the purports prior to this where Prabhupada talks about, you know, how when a government kills a living entity, you know, because they perform some capital crime, then they execute them, how it removes, you know, it sort of, the karma finishes there. But, you know, we don't have that adhikar to do that. You know, because if we started going around and killing demons, it would really impede the preaching of the Hare Krishna movement. We'd all wind up in jail. You know? And, you know, sometimes different members of ISKCON do illegal things. It was quite prominent in the early 80s. There was lots of illegal things going on, and we bore the consequences for it. So, you know, and even like in this day and age, you know, because there's a lot of this... I know what they call it in other countries, but in Australia we call it bleeding heart liberalism, where people say, oh no, you can't kill people, it's cruel, you know, like in terms of capital punishment with governments and that. So they just stick them in jail for a few years and they let them back out and they go out and kill somebody else. You know, so what's the use of their corrective system? It doesn't correct anyone. But the only thing that it can actually, I mean, my realization is like, even like, you know, people go to all these different self-help programs and go to counseling and stuff like that, and I don't see any change. I know plenty of people who have been through these things, and I personally don't perceive any change. Maybe they talk a little bit differently, but when they're put under pressure for the same thing, they respond in the same way. It's just like Prabhupada would use the analogy, you can dress up a dog and put him on the throne so he looks like the king. You throw him a bone, what does he do? He runs to the bone. So it's like the same thing, is you can go through all these external material things to try to improve yourself, but the only thing that will actually make a change is the process of Krishna consciousness, because we need to change our perception. We need to change our, you know, understanding. It's like, I'm not this body. Because all these external things are based on the body. And as long as we're functioning on that level of thinking on the body, we're going to act in a particular way based on that conditioning. But only through the process of Krishna consciousness can we actually see our eternal nature. So, yeah, give them Krishna consciousness, it will change the way they are. Killing them will only get us in trouble.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Oh, Apoorva's got a question.
So when Lord Brahma he stole the calves and the cows, like, was that his duty, or is he, how is he responding to because he has the highest post in the material world, why does he do this?
It goes back to that verse that I quoted before in the Bhagavad Gita, where it says, Ahankara vimudatma karta hamitimanya. The spirit soul of the world by the influence of false ego thinks himself the doer of activity. So he was thinking that, who is this ordinary boy who thinks he's my master? You know? They're saying he's Krishna, he can't be Krishna. He was bewildered by false ego. I mean, that's an external side of it. But then also we need to see that Krishna's I forgot the name of it, one of Krishna's poems, Leela Shakti, was acting there. Because it's interesting, I got a lot of insight into the pastimes of Krishna, because with Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Sarata Darshini, he gives like a little bit of comment on most of the cantos, but on the 10th canto, significant comment, so he gives a lot of explanation. And by reading the Sarata Darshini, I got a lot of insight into various things in the 10th canto. And he points out there how these different shaktis of Krishna act. You know, and sometimes they act even without Krishna knowing or independently from Krishna in order to enhance and enrich the pastimes, in order to sort of show Krishna's wonderful nature. So, okay, we see externally that the Brahma's bewildered. He's thinking that I'm the doer here. He's thinking that I'm the Lord of the universe, and who is this person anyhow? Yet, the internal reason, we see how that Krishna's pastime potency, the Lila Shakti, and there's another Shakti whose name I can't remember, is acting here to generate these pastimes that will enhance the residents of Vrindavan's affection for Krishna, that will enhance Krishna's fame. You know, so there's different things happening there, but you know, that's the understanding I have of it. Okay? Thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Samavekta Bhaktabindaki, Jayate Gopremanandi Haribol.